Wild Tales is sponsored by Cotswold Outdoor. When we're out in the elements, we're in our element. And outside retail expert Cotswold Outdoor is helping more of us to get out with the right kit. Thanks also to their support, the National Trust is helping walking communities to access the UK's outside spaces. And we're working to fix 15,000 kilometres of paths and trails by 2030 for everyone to enjoy. Find your element with Cotswold Outdoor.
You start seeing some of the migratory birds returning. We get the wheatears up here and they're in full song, and the meadow pipits come from the lowlands back up. We also get skylarks as well. So it all starts to come alive at this time of year.
Hello, I'm Ranger Rosie Holdsworth, and today I'm handing you over to fellow ranger and familiar voice Kate Martin, who recorded this episode last year. Kate headed to Northern Ireland to find the inspiration for a magical land that could only be discovered through the most ordinary piece of furniture, and to learn more about the magical author whose imagination brought it to life for millions. Welcome to Wild Tales, the man, the book, and the mountains.
So as you walk around the city of Belfast, you can immerse yourself in the life and work of a very special magician. You can walk to the house where he was born, you can visit the church he was baptised in, and if you head to the reading room at Queen's University, you actually enter it through a wardrobe door. So if you haven't guessed who this person is that Belfast absolutely celebrates, it's C.S. Lewis. Between 1949 and 1954, C.S. Lewis wrote a series of seven fantasy novels called The Chronicles of Narnia. Now, the most famous of those works and his most successful, most popular, is of course The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. But how did this seemingly average young Belfast boy grow up to be one of the most successful children's writers to have lived?
I'm Dr. Sarah Waters, and I'm a lecturer in English Literature at the University of Buckingham, and I specialise in C.S. Lewis and in Shakespeare. Lewis had a pretty active imagination, and he also was a pretty sickly child. He had to spend quite a lot of time indoors. Some of this time he spent reading, but actually a lot of this time he also spent writing his own stories. He loved writers like Beatrix Potter, and so he liked that idea of animals that could fight and win battles and could be involved in the creation of different countries and lands and so on. But also you have these characters in the books who really have their own sense of fully formed identity, even as children. And there are these really deep, very emotional, very serious themes running through the stories, which are there and are there if you want to engage with them, whatever age you're at. But there are also these moments of just pure joy where Father Christmas comes and we're also excited because we thought it was going to be the White Witch and it isn't. And that truthfully appeals across the generations. He gives his readers a kind of agency, I think, sort of irrespective of the age that they're at. And he puts these lessons that we as readers almost have to learn, but not in a kind of, well, if you don't learn it, you will be punished. And that will be the kind of moral sort of fabulistic nature of the story. But rather, here are some various paths. Look where they might lead you and maybe think about the consequences. He places adults and children on a kind of level playing field. Gives them the opportunity to draw their own conclusions and treat it as though those conclusions matter.
My name is Lolly Spence and I am a Blue Badge tour guide. One of my special passions is C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis had that gift of bringing magic to children but also to adults. That is a gift that's in our DNA as Irish people. We're storytellers. C.S. Lewis was born on the 29th of November, 1898. He had an older brother known as Warney. The two wee boys grew up in East Belfast, and at the time of their childhood, Ireland, it wasn't Northern Ireland then, Ireland was undergoing a lot of political unrest. His father, who was a lawyer, a solicitor, was very much caught up in the unionist politics, but their childhood was very much influenced by their mother, Flora Augusta Hamilton. She was a force of nature. in an era when women were supposed to be at home earning her husband's newspapers and warming the slippers, she was at Queen's University getting a first-class honours degree. She was homeschooling the boys. She was putting them on the train and taking them on lovely adventures. She was taking them on holiday. But she got cancer and their mother died. Their father was heartbroken, not really knowing or understanding what way to comfort two heartbroken boys. But luckily, a short time later, his dad came up with his plan, which filled him with joy, to send him to boarding school in Belfast. It's still there. It's still a private school to this day called Campbell College.
So I've come to Campbell College, and in the distance is a red brick school building, quite austere. And then in the foreground, there's this solo lamppost. There's nothing very notable about it. It's a Victorian lamppost. But to a little boy that attended this college, it was a real inspiration. And it became an iconic meeting place for two very different worlds to collide. It's clear that Lewis drew on many elements of his life, and particularly his childhood here in Belfast. But the one I'm most excited to see is the Granite Mountain Range that lies about an hour outside of the city. This, he said, was the inspiration for Narnia. So I'm going to step into the wardrobe, which is cleverly disguised as my airport rental car, and head over there.
And Peter, with his sword still drawn in his hand, went with the lion to the eastern edge of the hilltop. There, a beautiful sight met their eyes. The sun was setting behind their backs. That meant that the whole country below them lay in the evening light. Forest and hills and valleys and, winding away like a silver snake, the lower part of the great river. And beyond all this, miles away, was the sea. And beyond the sea, the sky, full of clouds which were just turning rose colour with the reflection of the sunset.
I've come to Ross Trevor in the Moor Mountains, and this is where C.S. Lewis said, "That part of Ross Trevor which overlooks Carlingford Lock is my idea of Narnia." It's not what I think of when I think of Narnia. I think of almost a Nordic landscape, but it is absolutely stunning. So what I've got in front of me is a beautiful sea loch, a few ripples on the water, and I've got a seaweedy, rocky covered, a little bit of sandy shore in front of me. And then in the distance, these magnificent rocky mountains that have just been glanced by the sun. And then behind me, I've also got mountains, but these ones are much more wooded. In the book, there are valleys, there are rivers, there are caves, there are rolling hills, fantastic mountains, and the sea. So I can see all those from this viewpoint. Aside from Narnia, though, the Mourns have actually been voted one of Ireland's favourite walking destinations, and I can absolutely see why. It really is glorious here. There's a network of paths and tracks that cover the whole of this mountain range. But I have to say, they're not for the faint-hearted. It is pretty steep and pretty rocky up there. But the views of the valleys, the lakes, the rivers and the reservoirs make it well worth the effort. The National Trust cares for 526 hectares of the Mourns, which takes in part Slieve Donard and Slieve Comeda. And I'm going to go and meet James, a National Trust ranger, and get up close and personal with this magnificent landscape. Hello, you must be James.
Hiya, Kate. Yes, I'm James. I'm lead ranger from the Mourns here.
Now, we're stood in a quarry with the beautiful waterfall coming down. So tell me a little bit about where we are and where we're going.
So we're on the on Thomas's Mountain in the quarry. I thought today we could walk across the open heath before heading up to the top of Slieve Donard, which is the highest peak in Northern Ireland.
Sounds absolutely amazing. So should we go?
Let's go.
It's a really quite an interesting landscape here. We've got the sort of very sort of rocky bare mountain that we're walking up, and then behind us we've got the plantation pine woodland, and then the sea beyond. It's a really special place, isn't it?
It is. We're very lucky to be here as an area of special scientific interest. Mm-hmm. we're designated here for the patchwork of wet and dry heath, mountain heath, which in such a compressed area is quite unusual to have such a diversity. We've got the mountain flushes and the dry acid grassland and the wet heath. And higher up on the summits of Slieve Donard and Slieve Comeda, we've got the mountain heath.
Okay, wow.
Which is a very rare habitat, especially in Northern Ireland. There's only three or four places where we see that.
And it's those sort of areas, you know, with climate change and temperatures rising, is that sort of mountain heath more at risk?
Unfortunately, it would be more at risk. That's one of the pressures that we face here in the Mourns, the increased rainfall and problems that that brings in terms of erosion.
Of course, yeah. There's a nice pile of interesting poo. Any idea what it might be?
I'm going to have a little hook there and see. It could well be pine marten, I think. We're so close to the forest here. We've got a really healthy population of red squirrel in the forest.
Oh, nice.
And that's obviously helped by the pine martens who predate on the grey squirrels. Yeah. So it's suggested that's what it is.
Because there's definitely fur in there, isn't there? Teeth.
That's
lovely.
Good stuff.
Obviously, one of the things, you know, that I've come here for is to sort of get a taste of what C.S. Lewis saw. I have to admit, it doesn't look like I imagine Narnia would look. But I guess, you know, that a lot of that was supposed to be set in winter. So does it look very different in winter?
It would have done in years gone by. Again, with climate change, whenever we do get snow, it doesn't hang around. It just tends to melt off very quickly. And the frozen days are few and far between now.
Yeah, so you don't get any weird women in sledges offering you Turkish delight.
Maybe one or two.
So, walking uphill again. I'm surrounded by these lovely dwarf, very spiky plants covered in coconut smelling yellow flowers.
Yeah, so at this time of year the whole mountainside is yellow at the minute. But this is Western gorse, so it's a bit different from the European gorse. It's a smaller plant. It is much spikier. But you can see it all here where it's been tightly grazed. There's a herd of fallow deer which live in the forest. You can see low down where it's almost like a topiary.
Yeah.
Then higher up, it's much more spread out, the growth.
Oh, it just smells like summer. Come down a little bit into the woodlands now and walk in up a very well-maintained path, if I do say so. This definitely is starting to feel a lot more like Narnia.
So now we're in the Donard Glen and we're walking up one of the main access routes into the Mourns. This is the main route up to the summit of Slieve Donard. And it's passed from here right to the summit.
It really is just beautiful. You know, I think that mixture between the sort of pine woodland and then, you know, the craggy hills, and there's waterfalls running down. And
I think at this time of year as well, Kate, whenever you start seeing some of the migratory birds returning, we get the wheatears up here and they're in full song, and the meadow pipits come from the lowlands back up. We also get skylarks as well.
Wow.
So it all starts to come alive at this time of year.
So we're saying they have pine martens and red squirrels, but what else is here that's so special?
We've got a population of red grouse that live much higher up, well off the beaten path. There was a recent programme to reintroduce red kites to the area.
Oh, yeah.
Which has actually been quite successful.
Brilliant.
And you see them occasionally flying overhead. They don't normally frequent the higher land as scavengers. They tend to stay lower.
They're a real success story, red kites, aren't they? Wherever they've been reintroduced, they seem to have really taken.
They do very well, yeah.
The patchwork, that mosaic of habitats, that must be really good for insect life and stuff as, and birds, obviously.
You get a real
well.
Biodiversity in this area because of that. Here you'll see green hairstreak, certainly close to the path. I've seen plenty of them. Later in the year, we'll see some of the fritillary, the large orange butterflies. We also have the grayling, which is a locally very rare butterfly. At this time of year also, we get emperor moths.
Oh, okay.
Which
wow.
are day flying, very, very colourful
yes.
moths. The, like the male is a beautiful orange colour and really fly. They're very strong flyers, mm-hmm. very fast, but unmistakable whenever you see them. And the female has a beautiful sort of purple-grey tinge.
Is that a red admiral?
That was a red admiral flying past.
Nice.
Just flown in from southern Europe somewhere. Mm.
It really is a beautiful, beautiful landscape. I can understand why it's so heavily protected.
It's an area of outstanding natural beauty. It's part of the special area of conservation. It's also, as of last year, a constituent part of the regional geopark, the UNESCO-designated geopark.
And that's for the geology,
that's
isn't it?
That's for the geology, and but that includes Strangford Loch and Slieve Gullion as well, so it's a huge area
yeah.
encompassed within that.
Wow. So it's a lot of pressure on you to look after it with all these special designations.
There is, but you have to count your blessings whenever you're out here and looking at it, and you realise how lucky you are to be looking after somewhere like this.
So I've come to the furthest point of our walk now, and I have to admit, I really wasn't expecting this sort of landscape in Northern Ireland. It feels much more like, or looks much more like I would expect the Highlands of Scotland or Snowdonia. You know, when I think of Northern Ireland, I don't think of these really, really epic landscapes. And I can absolutely see why C.S. Lewis touched such great inspiration. I've actually got a quote from him here, which says, "I have seen landscapes, notably in the Maugham Mountains and southwards, which under a particular light made me feel that at any moment a giant might raise his head over the next ridge." Feels epic, it feels mythical. So you're very lucky to work here, James. Any centaurs?
No? Well, let's get you home before we find out.
You were riding not on a road, nor in a park, nor even on the downs, but right across Narnia, in spring, down solemn avenues of beech and across sunny glades of oak, through wild orchards of snow-white cherry trees, past roaring waterfalls and mossy rocks and echoing caverns, up windy slopes alight with gorse bushes and across the shoulders of heathery mountains and along giddy ridges and down, down, down again into wild valleys and out into acres of blue flowers.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Wild Tales. If you'd like to hear more of Kate's adventures in Northern Ireland, the links to those episodes are in our show notes. For more from Wild Tales, follow us on your favourite podcast app and find us on Instagram at wildtalesnt. Wild Tales is sponsored by Cotswold Outdoor, your outside retailer and epic guides to adventure. Quick breathers, calming walks, or heart-pounding hikes, we feel better when we get out more. Find quality kit and 50 years of outdoor wisdom. Plus, National Trust supporters get 15% off walking kit in-store and online. Feel in your element, in the elements, at cotswoldoutdoor.com.